I bid you welcome to this week's Ox Talk, Tuesday the 21st of May 2024. This week's local news items were selected by Margaret Simpson and Lisa Tom and read by Janet Proudman and Ralph Weirs. The copy and distribution of the USB sticks is by Michelle Lawful and the technical officer is David Field. Today's sunrise is at 5 a.m. and sunset is at 9 o'clock. A late item: Oxford United fans will be pleased with the U's result of the League One playoffs final at Wembley on Saturday last. They won 2-0 and so are promoted to League One. And in case, like me, you're not quite sure what AHRC stands for, which appears in one of our items, it is Arts and Humanities Research Council.
Oxford's Market Street has reopened following work on several pedestrian-friendly improvements. The significant revamp by the Oxford City Council includes developments like upgraded surfaces, wider footways, fresh cycle racks, and additional outdoor seating, and new plantings have been added to support the covered market and attract more visitors. The alterations also include the reduction in the number of loading bays available, coupled with increased monitoring of parking rules and rearrangement of the remaining bays to bolster safety and use the existing space more effectively. The flexibility to temporarily shut the streets for events, markets or other use has been provided to make the most of the public realm enhancements for a larger crowd. Councillor Susan Brown, leader of the Oxford City Council and Cabinet Member for Inclusive Economy and Partnerships, has said, "Spring has finally arrived and I'm so pleased to see the transformation of Market Street complete in time to enjoy it." The new layout is also proving popular with residents and visitors, and I hope that as more people use the new space, it will become the extension and gateway to the covered market and other local businesses that we hope. We're interested to hear from people about how they find the changes in order to shape future plans, so please do take the time to feed back. Oxfordshire County Council's experimental traffic regulation order helped to deliver the improvements. The overall work was handled by the council's wholly owned service providing company ODS, aided by a £50,000 boost from Oxfordshire County Council. The design for these improvements, brought to life by Urban Movement, took into account feedback from several stakeholders, traffic surveys, and thorough safety audit processes. The endeavour of making improvements in Market Street is a part of the wider vision for enhancing the covered market's facilities, including adding additional cycle parking and refurbishment and possible relocation of the toilet block. The trial will be monitored and open for the public and stakeholders for review for the next 18 months. Any decision about permanently maintaining the alterations will only follow a formal consultation and would be influenced by its outcome.
One of Oxfordshire's biggest beer festivals is back. The 26th Charlbury Beer Festival will take place on Saturday the 29th, a day of fun, festivity and fundraising for all the family, taking place at Charlbury Cricket Club from 12 noon until 9 p.m. The festival in West Oxfordshire will offer around 60 real ales, a variety of craft beers, a range of ciders and perries, wine, gin and pims. There will also be a large selection of food, live music throughout, the culture tent with performances and talks, and children's entertainment. It will also feature the 12th World Aunt Sally Singles Championships, when Rob Bradford could win the crown for the third year running. Dave Richardson of the Oxford Drinker, the magazine for Real Ale Group Camera, said it will be raising money for community projects, both in the Charlbury area and overseas, with the last festival taking the total funds raised for good causes over the years to about £300,000. Last year, it awarded grants to Charlbury's Baby and Toddler Groups, Community Centre, Community Workshop, Cricket Club, Exhibition Foundation, Girl Guides, Preschool, Primary School, Scout Group, Wildlife Society, Youth Football Club and Chipping Norton Theatre. It also supported an overseas project supporting education for children and young women in Afghanistan. Started in 1998 by a group of primary school dads who brought a few barrels into Charlbury's Memorial Hall, it has become the country's largest independent one-day beer festival, and in 2022, 3,000 visitors were expected to attend. Charlby Cricket Club is just across the road from the town's rail station. All-day bus and train services operate, linking Charlby with Oxford, Chipping Norton, Reading, Whitney, Worcester and London. Thousands of Relail fans attended the Canberra-organised beer festival at Oxford Town Hall in November.
The Luther Street Medical Centre, known for helping some of Oxford's most vulnerable patients, has undergone a renovation. The facility, which provides healthcare to those experiencing homelessness or who are vulnerably housed, has welcomed a transformation of its reception area, thanks to the dedicated staff and funding from Oxford Health. The chief executive of Oxford Health, Grant MacDonald, paid a visit to see the updated reception area. He said, "Everyone who comes to Luther Street is treated with dignity and respect, and the staff here really are amazing. The new flooring, colour scheme and general overhaul of the reception may seem like a small thing, but it makes a big difference and gets any visit to Luther Street off on the right foot." Operating under the NHS since 2001 and a part of Oxford Health since 2013, the centre supports between 450 and 500 patients at any one time. Louise Daly, practice manager, said, "We are all pleased to have been able to improve the surroundings in the reception area for our patients." In the 1950s, Ted Cross and his future brother-in-law Richard French were two of the most popular visitors to the Slade camp in Oxford. They arrived there in a van loaded not only with ice cream, but also with sweets and chocolate. A large crowd of mothers and young children would be waiting to greet them, anxious to taste rare luxuries in post-war Headington. As we recalled in April, the site off Horsepath Driftway, the Slade and the Eastern Bypass housed an important military barracks during the Second World War. When hostilities ended and the soldiers moved out, the huts they lived in were used to house city families. Some of those who lived there were amongst 60 who joined a trek around the former camp organised by members of the Shotover Preservation Society in March. Mr. French, who now lives in Bournemouth, writes, "In the mid-1950s, during school holidays, I helped out on an ice cream van operated by the family of my future brother-in-law, Ted. The van carried ice cream, sweets and chocolate. Friday was the busiest day of the week as everyone had been paid. Lunchtime was spent outside the Morris Motors and Press Steel factories, and in the early evenings we covered Wood Farm Estate and Slade Camp. It was great fun. I knew the area well, as I knew the route from Headington, where I lived, to Southfield Grammar School off Cowley Road. Slade Camp had obviously been an army camp with concrete roads and large wooden huts set in a wooded area. The residents now were of all ages, but when the van arrived, there would be a large number of children and young mothers already waiting. The children wanted ice cream cones, but the women, most of whom appeared to be expecting babies, bought large amounts of chocolate and sweets, sometimes costing well over a pound. Bear in mind, this was about 70 years ago, and my weekly pocket money was 2 shilling, 10 pence now, if I was lucky. Mr. French joined Mr. Cross on the ice cream round for several years, always trying to beat the walls and Mr. Whippy vans and reach the customers first. He tells me, by the early 60s, I had left school and taken out full employment to the city. I wasn't paid while I was on the van, but it was good, and I did benefit from the occasional ice cream cornet. Although all the huts have now gone, there are still reminders of the site's years as a military base, including the remains of a toilet, a water tank and a pillbox. Four of the numbered avenues, 1st, 4th, 8th and 9th, still exist, and visitors continue to enjoy a leisurely stroll through the attractive wooded areas.
A metal detectorist found a magical medieval ring in a field which is now set to raise thousands of pounds at auction. The Drayton medieval gold ring, set with a sapphire and bearing an inscription believed to be magical, dates from about 1200 to 1300 AD. It is estimated to sell for £5,000 to £7,000 at Timeline Auctions on the 4th of June. The ring was found by Chris Weir, who was out with his metal detector near Drayton, Abingdon. Declared as treasure under the Treasure Act, it was subsequently disclaimed and returned to Mr. Weir. A spokesman for Timeline Auction said, "It is astonishing that a country like Britain, that has been so excavated by archaeologists and dug up by treasure hunters, is still producing many wonderful finds, thanks to the fraternity of metal detectorists." Aaron Hammond of Timeline Auctions comments, "There must be a few thousand people who are metal detector hobbyists. It constantly amazes me when they turn up items that might never have been seen again without their efforts and enterprise. Each object, however modest, helps to illustrate our knowledge of Britain's past and is thus of great significance. Anyone who digs up valuable treasure is required to report the find, not hang on to it or sell it to the highest bidder, but to take it to the authorities. As metal detecting equipment becomes cheaper and more easily available, and more people take up the hobby, more items are being discovered. The law varies across the UK. In Northern Ireland, it is illegal to remove any archaeological items from the ground without the landowner's written consent. All objects found must be reported within 2 weeks. In England, Wales and Scotland, you need permission from the landowner to go metal detecting, unless the site is historically protected, in which case all metal detecting is illegal. If you find treasure, you may be in line for financial compensation from the government. Timeline Auctions is known for selling metal detecting finds and will offer free valuations to any metal detectorists. ah@timelineauctions.com. The popularity of the BBC comedy drama series Detectorists is likely to have encouraged more people to try out metal detecting. Starring Toby Jones, who was a pupil at Abingdon School, and Mackenzie Crook, Detectorists ran for 3 series between 2014 and 2017. The series is set in the fictional small town of Danebury in North Essex. The plot revolves around the lives, loves and metal detecting ambitions of Andy and Lance, members of the Danebury Metal Detecting Club. The main filming location for the series was Framlingham, a small market town in Suffolk. Christmas specials were screened in 2015 and 2020.
Civil servants should be paid more to attract the best talent to Whitehall, and the outdated process of appointments is too easily gamed, according to research by a leading think tank. Analysis by the Institute for Government, IFG, of 148 senior roles across the 19 main government departments also found many officials lacked valuable experience of work outside the civil service. The analysis showed that 52% of senior officials attended Oxford or Cambridge universities in some capacity, including 74% of permanent secretaries. The IFG added that the high proportion of top officials who were Oxbridge educated could be due to candidates being prized for their credentials and stylized behaviours rather than their achievements. The report, Who Runs Whitehall? The Background Appointment, Management and Pay of the Civil Service's Top Talent, said the real term salary decreases across the civil service over more than a decade were particularly acute at the most senior levels. Average pay for both Director Generals and Permanent Secretaries was found to have fallen in real terms by approximately £35,000 and £40,000, respectively. The analysis described the difference between pay at senior levels of the civil service and the wider economy as extreme, with average Permanent Secretary earnings some 10% of the average wage of a FTSE 250 chief executive. In addition, other leaders in the public sector were found to be better paid than top civil servant. The average Director General's annual pay in 2023 was £138,500, while pay for comparable roles in sectors such as local government and the NHS ranged from £185,000 to £395,000. The report said excessively low pay disincentivised top talent from coming into government, and the civil service had fallen too far behind the private and the rest of the public sector to attract the talent it needs. The call for improved pay for senior civil servants comes after Prime Minister Rishi Sunak vowed to cut 70,000 civil service jobs to help fund an increase in defence spending to 2.5% of gross domestic product. The report also called for the appointments process for civil service roles to be modernised, as a cautious and outdated notion of what fair, open and meritocratic recruitment means did not always lead to the best candidates being hired for senior roles. The IFG is critical of a traditional recruitment model used by the civil service, which was described as someone has a bunch of scripted questions, someone has a bunch of scripted answers. There's no actual exchange of information. Traditionally, the civil service has been wary of more informal processes, but the current rigid process is easily gamed and less effective than it should be, the report added. Meanwhile, the analysis found that less than a quarter of permanent secretaries and director generals had a degree in STEM subjects, that's science, technology, engineering or mathematics. This compares to 44% of all UK graduates. A public consultation for land off Oxford Road is promising hundreds of affordable homes to the city's southeast. Oxford City Councillor Linda Smith said the development sits outside the City of Oxford boundary and would therefore be for the South Oxfordshire planning officers and councillors to assess the scheme against their planning policies. The only involvement of the City Council is that we are keen to see the site developed as set out in the local plan because it has the potential to deliver 1,800 new homes, including 900 new affordable homes, which would help address Oxford's unmet housing need and provide much-needed new homes for Oxford people in a sustainable extension to the city, Ms. Smith said. The plan describes that six Oxfordshire councils adopted the Oxfordshire Strategic Vision in 2021. This outlined the need for new homes as the county population was expected to grow with 100,000 new homes set to be needed before 2031. This latest plan for the land at the edge of Oxford next to Blackbird Lees is expected to address more than 11,500 households across Oxfordshire waiting on the council housing list. Developers said they hope to create a neighbourhood including new homes, a new primary school, and innovative methods to create attractive streets. Our vision is to create a distinct new green neighbourhood, the developers said through the website. A welcoming place with a strong identity to cultivate and foster, drawn from its location on the edge of Oxford, on the flanks of Northfield Brook. Establishing a healthy and safe community is key to our vision. Creating a well-connected place where walking, cycling and public transport are the most convenient and attractive ways to travel. The developers also said Northfield would be a calm place not dominated by traffic, with access to green spaces. Their interactive website includes vision of the proposed plans as well as a survey for locals to complete, available at my.engage.space/Northfield. The project team is hosting three free in-person events during the formal consultation period on May the 14th, 15th and 17th. The survey will close on May the 27th, with the results then being considered by the team to create the final content of the outline planning application. The South Oxfordshire and Vale of Whitehorse District Council's spokesperson said they were yet to receive a planning application for this development. Once received, the application will be determined following the normal planning processes, they said. We cannot comment at this stage. Dates for your diary. This summer you will have the chance to take part in Oxford's first ever sculpture trail, where life-sized and mini herds of oxen will be grazing throughout the county. Ox Trail is a celebration of the culture, places and people that makes Oxfordshire special. Each bold and beautiful sculpture will be designed by an artist, a school or a youth group to help make the herd truly unique. Following the 8-week trial, the life-sized oxen will go under the hammer at a spectacular auction. All of the funds raised will help to support the work of Sobel House, a cause close to the hearts of many people of Oxfordshire. Oxtrail can be spotted from the 6th of July to the 29th of August. For 8 extraordinary weeks, Oxford city streets will be home to over 30 bold and beautiful ox sculptures. The trail will be free and fun. The magnificent herd of oxen will be reunited for a final time on the 7th and 8th of September for a farewell weekend at Westgate, Oxford. Gather your friends and family together and help us give these oxen the send-off they deserve. Whether you've completed the trail or haven't had a chance to meet the oxen yet, this event presents a unique opportunity to see them all at once and admire the incredible work that Oxtrail artists and local children have put into their designs. After the farewell weekend, the life-sized oxen will be auctioned off in a live grand auction at the Said Business School on the 13th of September. Every pound raised will help to fund the care Sobel House Hospice provides, so more families in our local community have support at a time when they need it most.
New bus lane cameras and signs have been installed at low traffic neighbourhoods, LTNs, across Oxford. The enforcement cameras have been added to 6 LTN closure points in the city this week. These automatic number plate recognition cameras will enforce traffic restrictions while giving access to emergency services vehicles. They are yet to be activated, though with Oxfordshire County Council revealing that all 6 locations will go live at the same time. The affected locations are the LTNs at Crescent Road, Littlehay Road and Littlemore Road in Cowley, as well as Divinity Road, James Street and Maglan Road in East Oxford. A spokesman for the council said the LTN automatic number plate recognition cameras have been successfully installed and we are now completing final works on the site before they go live. The cameras will all go live at the same time. Bollards will be replaced with cameras at the six locations, with planters retained at either side of the restriction. Emergency, waste and postal service vehicles will be exempt, as will taxi and private hire vehicles, as will buses in Littlemore Road. It comes after the announcement that the initial intended switch-on date for the new cameras was delayed. The switch-on date previously expected was provisional and subject to satisfactory installation and testing, added the council spokesman. Final works include testing, bollard removal and minor ground surface treatment.
Artist Caroline Parks shows off her vibrant work at her Woodstock studio. The painter is one of hundreds who have been taking part in the Oxfordshire Art Weeks by opening their studios, workshops and galleries to the public. The festival started last week in the west and north of the county. The focus this week is on Oxford, with painters, drawers, printers, sculptors, potters, jewellery makers and assorted craftspeople inviting visitors into their homes and workplaces. The final part of the festival will see art lovers visiting makers in the south of the county. Festival spokeswoman Esther Lafferty said, "As Oxfordshire Art Weeks continues into a second week, venues across the city are opening their doors and welcoming you in to see art, design and craft handmade locally. Come and see what's new in Oxford."
Dr. Jacob Downs, Departmental Lecturer in Music and Chair of Faculty, and Dr. Shona Minson, who has been a British Academy Research Fellow at the Centre for Criminology, Faculty of Law, have been named among the UK's most promising arts and humanities early career researchers in this year's BBC New Generation Thinkers. Every year, a nationwide search is held for the best new arts and humanities academics with ideas that will resonate with a wider audience on BBC Radio. From hundreds of applications, these 10 New Generation Thinkers represent some of the best early career researchers in the country. They will be given the opportunity to share their pioneering research with BBC Radio 4 listeners, as well as being provided with unique access to training and support from AHRC and the BBC. The 2024 New Generation Thinkers will bring new insights into diverse topics, with research including the possible existence of the multiverse, the future of black literature, the surprisingly dark history of Technicolor film, and the search for the greatest philosopher who never existed. Everywhere you look, people are using intimate sound technologies to reshape and enrich their experience of the world, surrounding themselves in the bubbles of noise-cancelling headphones to listen to podcasts, audiobooks, and whispered pop vocals. Why are we seeking out intimate sound worlds so much in the 21st century? In his research, Dr. Jacob Downs places contemporary listening under the microscope to investigate the effects of new sound media on everyday lives. Dr. Jacob Downs is Departmental Lecturer in Music at the University of Oxford, where he researches and lectures on topics in 20th and 21st century music and sound. He is currently writing two books, one on headphone listening, the other on environmentalist music, and articles on subjects ranging from AI-generated music to Beyoncé's latest album. Dr. Downs said, "My research is born out of a fascination with quizzing people about their listening experiences. In my work, I use a range of approaches, from the scientific to the philosophical, to study perceptions of music and sound in both public and private spaces. I explore how people use headphones to cushion themselves against the onslaught of contemporary life, what individuals are looking for when they listen to hours of whispered ASMR-inducing videos on YouTube, and why lots of us seem more and more to be choosing to play sound from our phones out loud on buses. It's fantastic to know the BBC and the AHRC appreciate the weirder end of humanities research and have made me a new generation thinker for 2024. Originally from Belfast, Dr. Shona Minson is an award-winning criminologist at the University of Oxford, whose first career as a family and criminal barrister led her to explore families and punishment. Shona is a unique voice and a leading authority on how to do justice better for women and their children. She contributes regularly to public conversations about the wider consequences of punishment and women's justice issues. Her innovative short films, based on interviews with children, mothers and grandmothers affected by maternal imprisonment, changed legal professional practice in the UK and overseas. Her first book highlighted the lack of concern given to children whose mothers are imprisoned, and the next examines the impact on society when the motherhood of criminalised women is disregarded. Dr. Minson said, "As a former family barrister, I was shocked to find the criminal justice system didn't consider children when a mother was sentenced. In the family courts, the best interests of children are the paramount consideration in all decision making. My research has had a role in changing that, and sentencing courts should now consider the impact of a sentence on any dependent children. I think we need to have more conversations about the purpose and outcomes of punishment, so that we understand how individuals, families, communities and society are affected by imprisonment. I hope that being part of this scheme will give me the opportunity to make programmes which will stimulate public interest in these issues." Professor Christopher Smith, AHRC Executive Chair, says, "The New Generation Thinkers programme brings interesting, important ideas into the public consciousness, shaping thought and discussion. From fundamental questions about the nature of reality to how political propagandists harness the seductive power of technicolour and the impact of imprisonment on mothers and children, and the most challenging problems of our day. These are ideas of thrilling originality and importance. These 10 brilliant original thinkers demonstrate the ability of the arts and humanities to help us to better understand both ourselves and the world around us."
Another date for your diary. Located just 4 miles from the dreaming spas of Oxford, Hill End's 67 acres of tranquil and beautiful surroundings are a world away from urban life. As an independent charitable trust, they only accept bookings from schools, companies and organised groups, but they try to organise as many public events as their small team can manage to give the community the opportunity to be closer to nature, with the space and time to explore and appreciate the wonders of the natural environment. In May, they have the opportunity for you to explore ancient woodlands, build dens and hunt for mini-beasts. Plus, these days have special permission for visitors to walk through Whiteham Woods to Hill End and back. Visit hill-end.org/activities/upcoming-events for full details and to book. Come and celebrate Hill End on Saturday the 8th of June at our Fennel Festival. The Fennel family bought Whiteham Estate in the 1920s. The Whiteham Estate is made up of Whiteham Woods and Hill End together, a beautiful and unique education resource. In the 1920s, the Fennels embraced new and innovative educational methods to simply get children outdoors, which is just as relevant today. The Fennel Festival is a wonderful day out with the family and friends, with lots of outdoor and nature crafts and activities. The Fennel Festival runs from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. on the 8th of June. Full details and tickets are at hill-end.org/news/fennel-festival-2024. Fennel is spelt F-F-E-N-N-E-L-L.
The closure of an East Oxford post office is set to go ahead next week, despite concern and disappointment from politicians, who have blamed the loss on low-traffic neighbourhoods, LTNs. Templar Square in Cowley is set to lose its parcel-sending facility from Saturday the 25th of May, as the Mid-Counties Co-op store, which hosts it, leaves the area. A new office will come to the closest viable co-op location in Rose Hill. Independent Oxford Alliance councillors David Henwood, Ian Yateman and Anna Stairs set up a petition in March entitled Save Post Office Services in Templar Square Shopping Centre, which has amassed almost 600 signatures. Cowley councillor Mr Yateman said, "The closure of the co-op and post office deals another significant blow to Templar Square and its patrons. This will especially impact the elderly and those with limited mobility, who may face challenges accessing essential services provided by the post office. Additionally, it spells trouble for the remaining businesses already struggling to survive amidst the reduced foot traffic." Mid-Counties Chief Executive Officer Philip Ponsonby said, "In November last year, the closure reflected the long-term trading position of the store and was not connected to the impact of LTNs. But the previous month, the Mid-Counties Cooperative said its Iffley Road and Cowley Road stores had seen a downturn in trade because of the controversial traffic calming measures. As part of consultation with the County Council, co-op bosses revealed the Iffley Road store had seen a 4.6% decrease in trading compared with the previous year, while the Cowley Road store was down 21.13%. This reduction compared with an average 5% increase across non-LTN co-op stores in the same period." The other Cowley Ward councillor, Amar Latif, of the Independent Group, agreed the very likely impact of LTNs had contributed to the closure. Mr. Latif said, "I think it's very disappointing news. It is concerning for the future of Templar Square because we've had quite a few shops close in the shopping centre in the last few years. I'm hopeful there's an opportunity for an alternative branch." Mr. Henwood, Rose Hill and Iffley councillor, added, "It's in a central location. It serves Blackbird Lees, Cowley, Littlemore and Rose Hill. Many people in Cowley won't be able to easily access the Rose Hill one due to the LTN scheme." Oxfordshire County Council made LTNs permanent in East Oxford last year with the intention of preventing traffic from taking shortcuts through residential areas and making streets safer for walking and cycling. But some have blamed the measures for increasing congestion and negatively impacting businesses' trade. The council says it continues to monitor the LTNs on a site-by-site basis and evaluate their impact.
A lifestyle guide has revealed the winners of its sought-after business awards. The Muddy Stilettos Awards are handed out to organisations across 28 counties, including Oxfordshire. The awards, which are free for all businesses to take part in, aim to shine a light on independent lifestyle business providers. Announcing this year's In Love with Local Awards, it said, "A whopping great thank you to all our Muddy readers who took part or voted. The Muddy Awards are nothing without you." The Muddy Stilettos Award winners in and around Oxfordshire are the Living Room Cinema Chipping Norton for Arts, Culture and Theatre Venue, the Bull at Burford for Boutiques Day, the Milkshed Western on the Green for Cafes, Tigers and Tiaras Henley for children's businesses, The White Hart at Fifield for destination pub, Rackley's Chiltern Hills Cadmore End for event venue, Warren James Hairdressing Wallingford for hair salon, Crazy Bear Studhampton for hotel, Beehive Chipping Norton for lifestyle store, local food and drink producer Cotswold Baking Limited, Chipping Norton, and Ensham Cellars won the Wine and Beer Specialist. The national finals are held from July the 3rd to the 11th, it said. Regional winners from every category will now automatically go through to our prestigious national finals. The national winners will be announced on the 11th of July. In football news, Greg Lee says that taking penalties comes naturally to Cameron Branigan in the same way that walking and breathing do. Oxford United spot kick maestro coolly converted from 12 yards to nudge the U's back in front on aggregate in their Sky Bet League One playoff semi-final against Peterborough United. Branigan's latest penalty took its tally to 10 successful spot kicks this season, with not a single one to foil. Posh defender Josh Knight had levelled a semi-final tie on aggregate just minutes earlier, with the pressure on Branigan to restore the U's advantage from the spot after Harrison Burrows was penalised for a handball in the area. Lee said, "Penalties are just something that comes naturally to him. It's like walking or breathing. When we got the penalty, there were a lot of hearts in mouths, and I think the calmest person in the studio was him. He knew what he had to do, and he dispatched it. That's a leader you need out there. He can bring that fire in the belly, but he can also bring that calm head. They say fire in the belly and ice in the head, and Cam is the epitome of that."
Two food festivals in Oxfordshire have been named among the best in the UK. Travel magazine Condé Nast Traveller published its list of the best food festivals in the UK recently. Several locations featured on the list, such as Edinburgh and Leeds, but Oxfordshire managed to make the cut twice. Blenheim Palace Food Festival in Woodstock was listed as one of the highlights when it comes to UK food festivals. "UK food festivals don't get much classier than this," reads the article. "Each summer, chefs such as Raymond Blanc, Olivia Burt and Gurdeep Loyal set up camp in the shadow of Oxfordshire's most exquisite country house for a weekend of feel-good food. Pick up artisan treats and homemade sweets and cool down in the, hopefully, balmy summer sunshine with craft beers, cocktails and fruity mocktails. Furry friends and children are welcome, with special activities like cooking classes and circus skills sessions for budding foodies. The big festival held in Chipping Norton at Blur star Alex James's farm also made the list. Imagine Glastonbury, but with lots more delicious food. That's the big festival," added the article. Nestled in a secluded Cotswolds farm, the big festival serves up plenty of spectacular dishes with a side of amazing tunes. While headliners, including Becky Hill and Snow Patrol, perform their hits on the main stage, foodies tuck into award-winning street food, Michelin-worthy meals, or dish up their own at the cookery school. There's even a cheese-tasting corner.
A study has found that the University of Oxford is the most beautiful university in the UK, according to new research. Research by Immerse Education discovered that the university is the most photogenic institution in the country, with nearly 460,000 Instagram posts tagged with Oxford University. Not only is Oxford top in the UK, The study found that it is the second most beautiful university in the world under the metrics. This claim is backed up by nearly 500,000 posts across Instagram and TikTok. Following closely behind in the UK is the University of Cambridge, the second most beautiful university in the country, with over 335,000 posts across the two platforms. The University of Birmingham took third place with more than 160,000 Instagram posts tagged with University of Birmingham. Among the world, the most Instagrammed university is the University of California, Los Angeles, UCLA, with nearly 2 million posts, with Oxford coming in second place globally. Sean Stevens, CEO at Immerse Education, said, "For ambitious students, summer school can be a launch pad for academic growth. It's important to do your research and pick one that's right with you. Find a summer school program that aligns with your goals, whether it's diving deeper into a favourite subject, exploring a potential college major, or pushing yourself with challenging new courses. Look for programs with extracurricular activities to create a well-rounded learning experience."
Thames Valley Police has objected to Oxford United's plans to build a new 16,000-seater stadium due to a lack of details on issues such as counter-terrorism and road safety. The force said it must object, as it is unable to fully assess the proposals for a new stadium at land known as the Triangle in Kidlington due to insufficient information within the application. The objection highlighted a lack of information on a number of issues, including highways and road safety, cycle parking, counter-terrorism, football policing and operations, landscaping, lighting and CCTV. In its response to the stadium plans, Thames Valley Police maintained the proposals must facilitate the safe movement of large volumes of people to and from the stadium. Designing out crime officer Kevin Cox said, "Prior to permission being granted, specific details need to be provided indicating how the safe movement of people will be achieved and the impact this will have on the surrounding area and road network. I understand a number of options are currently being explored and ask that data is provided covering all possible eventualities, including the possibility of road closures on the Oxford Road." The force has asked for a traffic management plan that includes details on parking for fans and staff on match days. Police are also requesting more details on road closures, safe operations of the Oxford Parkway train station park and ride, and bus routes during events. It also should include details on emergency vehicle access, as well as match day controlled parking zones, CPZs, as well as prevention of unauthorised parking in the area, the force added. In the event of any road closure, Thames Valley Police said that diversionary routes must not become unacceptably impacted. Modelling should be completed for both weekday and weekend fixtures, police said. Officers are requesting data including the application site and surrounding network, including the Pear Tree Interchange and A34, Wolvercote Roundabout, Cutterslow Roundabout, Loop Farm Roundabout, the A4260 and Bicester Road. The force added that a hostile vehicle mitigation plan must be submitted for match days, describing it as being of fundamental importance for the development. Pedestrian and transport modelling also needs to be provided, say the police, to demonstrate the safe flow of movements for events, such as high-risk fixtures with segregation in place and emergency evacuation of the stadium at full capacity. The force also said that plans must be provided for cycle storage that is required including on-site storage and any facility to be provided at Parkway Station. Detailed landscaping, lighting and CCTV plans are not available either, the force's objection continued, with further consultation with Thames Valley Police requested by the club on this issue. The force said that the club must provide all the requested information prior to support being given, adding permission should not be granted by Charwell District Council until this is done. Jonathan Clark, property director at Oxford United, said, "We welcome the feedback and will be working on the details to ensure Thames Valley Police has the additional information it needs. This is a collaborative process and each element outlined will be addressed comprehensively in the detailed plans, which we are confident will gain support. Overall, our plans will deliver a world-class venue that is sustainable, safe and delivers vast benefits to the Oxfordshire community and economy."
A number of schools in Oxford have been nominated for an awards ceremony dubbed the Oscars of Education. The Times Educational Supplement Schools Awards 2024 brings independent and state schools together to celebrate excellence across the whole education sector. Award categories up for grabs include Boarding School of the Year, Inclusive School of the Year, and Teaching Assistant of the Year, among others. Among the schools in Oxford up for an award is the Oxford High School, which has been nominated in the Independent Prep School of the Year category. Head teacher of Oxford High Prep School, Jessica Williams, said, "Being shortlisted for the TES Awards is a tremendous honour and a testament to the dedication and innovative spirit of our entire school community. We are proud of the transformative educational experiences we offer our students and are thrilled to be recognised for our efforts." The Dragon School in Summertown has also been nominated for an award as it looks to win in the Boarding School of the Year category, while Headington School's Economics Department has been nominated in the Subject Lead of the Year category for secondary schools. A statement from the Headington School said, "We're delighted to share that our economics department has been shortlisted in the TES Schools Award for Subject Lead of the Year. With huge uptake and excellent outcomes, it's great to see recognition for the team." Magdalene College School has also been nominated in the Tim Brighouse Community Engagement Initiative of the Year category. Mr. Brighouse, who passed away last year, was the school's commissioner for London between 2002 and 2007. He was also the Chief Education Officer for Oxfordshire between 1978 and 1989 and was described by a former colleague as a towering figure in British education. A statement from Magdalene College School said, "We are delighted to announce that Magdalene College School, Oxford, has been nominated for a prestigious TES Schools Award in the category of the Tim Brighouse Community Engagement Initiative of the Year." A panel of industry experts who are highly respected in their fields will judge each of the 21 categories, and the winners will be announced at a ceremony in the Grosvenor Hotel, Park Lane, London, on Friday, June the 21st. A winner of a special Lifetime Achievement Award will also be revealed on the night. John Severs, editor of TES Magazine, said, "Congratulations to all the shortlisted entries. The standard was so high this year, despite the challenge that schools face. It is critical we celebrate excellence and share it widely, so we can ensure that this fantastic work happening in education is properly recognised." A call out for your surplus fruit and veg. As a Botley-based charity that helps most vulnerable people in Oxfordshire, we are on the lookout for any surplus fruit and veg you can spare from your garden plot, allotment or farm. The Oxford Food Hub based in the Curtis Industrial Estate, provides for a broad range of communities, with its support extending not only to food banks, but also to warm spaces, homeless shelters, mental health support charities, and children's hospices. While there is a desperate need for donated food, we are finding it increasingly difficult to source supplies on a regular basis, so your generosity would be much appreciated. People who want to help can put their donated supplies, fruit and vegetables, into crates that will be placed outside the main doors of Cumnor Old School on Sundays from May onwards. The food will then be transported to the hub each Monday morning. We would like supplies of fresh fruit and vegetables that are still of reasonable quality and freshness. Please give no produce that is definitely past its best. Thank you all who support the Oxford Food Hub at the moment. If you want to find out more, please email us at admin@oxfordfoodhub.org or call 01865 236 420.
The owner of a popular cocktail bar in Oxford has been told he can't convert part of it into flats. Earlier this year, the owner of the house bar in Wychiff Yard off High Street applied for planning permission to transform the first and second floor of a bar into 4 one-bedroom flats. The ground floor was to remain a bar, according to the change of use application considered by the City Council. But council planners have now refused owner Glenn de Unger's change of use application because the loss of the community facilities would cause grave harm to the vibrancy of the city centre. The decision document said the proposal would involve the loss of the upper floors of the house cocktail bar serving as function rooms, which are considered to be a community facility which currently adds to the social and cultural scene of the city. The loss of this community facility would cause grave harm and damage to the vibrancy, diversity, and socio-economic makeup of Oxford City Centre. The submitted application fails to demonstrate that the house bar as a whole or the upper floor function rooms are unviable, nor does it demonstrate that there are comparable alternative facilities within the city centre. The proposed residual cocktail bar use on the ground floor would not adequately retain the use of the site in a manner that would safeguard the valued community facility. Further to this, the noise-sensitive nature of the upper floor uses proposed may lead to the complete loss of cocktail bar from the site or adjacent music venue use in the future. Customers who have been turning up for late-night cocktails since 2009 are likely to be relieved that the flats proposal has not been permitted. The club is closed on Sunday and Monday, but stays open late on other nights of the week. The house describes itself as a buzzing young bar in central Oxford, with its own games room, private terrace with Philippe Stark sofas, and a seriously well-thought-out cocktail list. The house is an intimate yet lively venue. The bar has attracted plenty of attention since it opened in early 2009, gracing the pages of Vogue as a fashion shoot location and featuring in Elle magazine's Top 25 Bars 2010. A live music venue upstairs closed in 2021. Before it shut, it hosted some of the biggest bands to have emerged from the city, including Supergrass, Stornoway and Foals, who played their first gig there. The intimate venue was home to a wide variety of gig nights, giving local bands a crucial platform and attracting acts to the city. It also hosted Oxford's only jazz club, The Spin.
It's a wonderful time of year to put on your walking shoes and get out and about in the fresh air. With birdsong in full force and summer knocking on the door, there's plenty to discover this month on the footpaths, bridleways and byways that crisscross much of the Oxfordshire countryside. May is the month of fresh green leaves, the buzz of bees, and the frothy white combination of hawthorn flowers and cow parsley that is especially evocative of spring. With the undulating nature of the local landscape, you're never very far from a spectacular view of the surrounding countryside. However, it's worth remembering that many of these views will be lost for a generation, possibly forever, if the Botley West solar power station proposal goes ahead. The sheer scale of the proposal and the potential damage is mind-boggling. 68 miles of existing footpaths, essentially zero traffic and rural in character, overwhelmed by 2 million solar panels. 156 power converter stations the size of large shipping containers will possibly drown out any birdsong with a 67 decibel hum. 11 miles long and 4 miles wide, 75% on greenbelt land, threatening rare water meadows by the Thames and adjacent to many other heritage assets, 45% of the solar panel area occupying the best and most versatile land for agriculture and food production, and 2 years of construction noise, disruption and heavy lorry traffic, which will severely affect everyone, will impact the work commute, school run, hospital appointments, leisure trips and so on. Local roads will be affected by construction activity and heavy lorry traffic. Traffic will divert to alternative routes and smaller roads will see higher levels of traffic. High security fences, together with security cameras, will reduce footpaths to narrow corridors in between rows of solar panels, substations and other electrical equipment. Existing vistas will no longer exist, and the public amenity value of our land will be decreased. A reservoir embankment trial, which will help to inform Thames Water's plans for a new reservoir near Abingdon, has received planning permission from the Vale of Whitehorse District Council. The backing from the Council's planning committee means that Thames Water can develop its understanding of the ground conditions at the site, southwest of Abingdon, where it proposes to build a new 150 billion litre reservoir. The utility company said this was a major step in developing the design proposals for the reservoir, known as South East Strategic Reservoir Option, SESRO. It's anticipated that contractors working on behalf of Thames Water will begin embankment trials this summer to understand how the local clay reacts when compacted. Derek Stork, a spokesperson for GARD, Group Against Reservoir Development, said the latest development did not mean the reservoir has any sort of go-ahead and campaigners are still calling for a public inquiry. During the trial, the company will excavate the clay and layer it into three mounds, 50 by 20 by 2 metres in diameter and length. Ground investigations are already underway. Leonie Dubois, Thames Water's head of engagement, land and consents, said, "We listen carefully to residents and understand that they want assurances about the design and integrity of the reservoir. This is why we're starting the process to understand local ground conditions at a really early stage. As the population grows and the effects of climate change continue to take hold, demand for water will only increase. We're serious about tackling water leakage and reducing consumption levels, but that alone isn't enough. We must build more resilient infrastructure to avoid a future crisis, and the reservoir has a vital role to play." The results of the trial, which will take place over 12 months, will play a crucial role in informing the engineering design and embankment construction proposed for this vital new water supply. The scale and significance of SESRO as a means of tackling future water shortages for the South East has led to its classification as a nationally significant infrastructure project, NSIP. The reservoir would help to secure future water supply for local Oxfordshire residents, as well as 16 million people across the Thames Water, Southern Water and Affinity Water catchments. The strategic case of the reservoir is outlined in Thames Water's revised draft Water Resources Management Plan, which is currently with the government for consideration. The plan sets out a range of investment measures proposed to combat the effects of climate change and population growth.
A new study from the University of Oxford has found that many COVID-19 infections in the general population can last for a month or more. The researchers used data from the Office for National Statistics COVID Infection Survey, which is the largest regular survey of COVID-19 infections in the general population. Out of over 90,000 participants, 3,603 provided two or more positive test samples between November 2020 and August 2022. Of these, 381 people had infections that lasted at least a month, and 54 had infections that lasted 2 months or more. The researchers estimate that 0.1 to 0.5% of all infections could become persistent, lasting for at least 60 days. Some individuals continue to be infected with virus variants that had already disappeared from the general population. Reinfection with the same variant was rare, likely because people developed immunity to it. Among the 381 persistent infections, 65 people had three or more PCR tests over the course of their infection. Most of these showed a pattern of the virus going up and down in strength, indicating that the virus can keep replicating during long infections. This shows the importance of ongoing monitoring to track new variants and understand how the virus evolves and affects patients. Dr. Mahan Ghaffari, a co-lead author of the study, emphasized the need for continued community-based genomic surveillance to watch for new variants and understand COVID-19 better. The study also found that people with persistent infections were 55% more likely to report long COVID symptoms lasting more than 12 weeks compared to those with shorter infections. Some individuals with long infections had a high number of mutations, including those that could define new variants and change how the virus interacts with treatments. However, most long infections did not result in many mutations, suggesting that not every long-lasting infection will lead to new variants. Dr. Katrina Lithgow, another co-lead author, noted that while the link between persistent infections and long COVID isn't necessarily direct, these results suggest that long infections could play a role in causing long COVID. Other possible reasons for long COVID include inflammation, organ damage, and tiny blood clots.
There are plans to introduce new so-called traditional homes to an Oxfordshire village in the hope they will blend in with other low-key rural dwellings in the area. Applicant PL Homes has submitted their proposal to build five houses south of The Paddocks in East Hannay, near the Oxfordshire town of Wantage. The village is said to be characterised by a broad range of architectural styles, with semi-rural residential properties on modest plots with off-street parking. A planning paper says the overall form of the dwellings takes cues from local examples of relatively low-key rural dwellings. The proposal reinforces local distinctiveness, helping to assimilate the new development into the wider environment and echoing the typical forms within the village and the similar developments adjoining the site and further north along the A338. The proposed dwellings have traditional forms. The treatment of the units borrows from the palette of elements and materials in the locality. If approved, the walls for the houses will be constructed from a red or orange multi-facing brick with either red or orange or charcoal grey tile or slate for the roof. The long lives of sub-4-minute milers show that extreme exercise doesn't reduce lifespan, according to new research. A study of the first 200 athletes to run a mile in under 4 minutes, including Oxford's Sir Roger Bannister, who was the first to achieve the landmark feat in Iffley Road, shows they outlive the general public by around 5 years. The study, published online in the British Journal of Sports Medicine, marks the 70th anniversary of Sir Roger Bannister's world record-breaking run at Oxford University's Iffley Road athletics track in the city on the 6th of May 1954. Sir Roger, who was later knighted for his services to sport, died in March 2018 of pneumonia, aged 88, 20 days short of his 89th birthday. While regular moderate exercise is considered a pillar of healthy ageing, researchers said it has long been thought that exposing the body to bouts of extreme endurance exercise may push it too far and shorten life expectancy. Study author Professor Mark Haykowski said, "The repeated bouts of near maximal to maximal exercise performed by mile runners makes them a unique group in which to test the potential impact of extreme, intense exercise on longevity." The research teams scrutinised the list of 1,759 athletes who had run a mile in under 4 minutes as of June last year. They extracted the details of the first 200 to do so on the grounds that they would be at an age that would either match or exceed the average life expectancy for their generation. The athletes' longevity was tracked from the exact date of their first successful attempt at breaking the 4-minute barrier to either the age of 100, the end of 2023, or death, to find out the average difference in life expectancy between them and the general population, matched for age, sex, and nationality. This difference was calculated as the observed life years for a runner minus their population-matched life expectancy. The number was then averaged across all 200. So the first 200 athletes to break the 4-minute mile spanned a period of 20 years, from 1954 to 1974. They came from 28 different countries across Europe, 88, North America, 78, Oceania, 22, and Africa, 12. They were all born between 1928 to 1955 and were aged 23 on average when they ran the mile in under 4 minutes. Of the total, 60, which is 30%, had died, and 140 were alive at the time of the analysis. The average age at death was 73, but ranged from 24 to 91, while the average age of the surviving runners was 77, ranging from 68 to 93. The cause of death was not known for most of the athletes, but of the 7 who died before the age of 55, 6 were due to trauma or suicide, and 1 was due to pancreatic cancer. Professor Haykowski of the University of Alberta, Canada, said, "The analysis revealed that the under 4-minute milers live nearly 5 years beyond their predicted life expectancy on average, based on sex, age, year of birth, age at achievement, and nationality." He added, "When factoring in the decade of completion, those whose first successful attempt was in the 1950s lived an average of 9 years longer than the general population during an average tracking period of 67 years. And those whose first successful attempt was in the 60s and 70s lived 5.5 years and nearly 3 years longer during an average tracking period of 58 and 51 years, respectively." Sir Roger's feat was recognised last week with a mass Bannister Mile running event in Oxford, in which over 1,000 people took part.
A children's play park has been closed for months after being washed out as it was flooded with infected water. The Oxford Park in Alexandra Road near Botley Road opened its doors again in the aftermath of it being flooded with dirty water in February when the local river burst its banks. Special cleaners have been sent out to deal with the E. coli and other forms of bacteria. This comes amid claims Thames Water was behind the sewage discharge, though the organisation is adamant that it is not the water company's responsibility. Labour councillor Susanna Presel for the Hinksey Park ward said, "Thames Water can't deny that most of the sewage in our streams and rivers is caused by the horrendous illegal discharges of raw sewage from their so-called treatment works. They should be the ones cleaning up our playgrounds if they get flooded. I have been asking the City Council to clean up and reopen the play area for months." Ms. Presel said the ground in the park had been too soft for it to allow for earlier cleaning. She added, "Their vehicle with the pressure washing equipment would have caused a lot of damage to the grass. What I have asked the Parks Department to find out is whether they could have put down temporary boards to reduce the damage or whether there is another solution, and what other cities and countries do in such circumstances. I have also asked them to find out from our environmental health officers whether contact with the equipment in the play area did still present a risk to our children, so many months after the flooding. I'm told that this varies, but I want them to come and test the play equipment next time this happens, rather than leaving the play area closed for months." A Thames Water spokesman said, "When this flooding happened, Thames Water attended and checked our foul water system and found no evidence of discharge or pollution, and our sewer was flowing correctly. Our investigations concluded that the flooding was not due to a failure of our sewers. River health is not the sole responsibility of Thames Water, and there are many factors which influence river quality and flooding. There are multiple sources of E. coli in watercourses throughout England, including agriculture runoff, industry, misconnected properties, and sewer failures. Oxfordshire County Council is the lead local flood authority, but it insists the levels of rain were especially high for 2024. The council has also justified its flooding defences with Cabinet Member for Climate Change Responsibility Pete Sudbury having previously said the Environment Agency, Thames Water and others had worked extensively to manage the flood crisis. An Oxford City Council spokesman said, "Oatlands Park was closed after the flooding as some of the play equipment was dirty. The cleaning operation had to wait until the wet ground was dry enough to allow cleaning equipment onto the site, which was the case last Sunday and Monday."
Mark Thomas, social inclusion lead at Oxford United in the Community, discusses the achievements of a Premier League Kicks participants and a trip to St George's Park. It's often said that money can't buy happiness, and positive feelings are instead generated from our social connections, purpose, and how we define the meaning of life. Speaking practically, money for many families in Oxfordshire will earn very little in these testing economic times, and it is in most examples money which allows people to be part of a club, a venue, or a team, which provides that sense of purpose and enjoyment. At Oxford United in the Community, we're big believers that finances should never control a person's ability to engage with physical activity, especially children. That's why in August 2020, we partnered with the Premier League to launch Premier League Kicks, a free weekly programme delivered during term time for children aged 8 to 18, which uses the power of football and sport to inspire participants to reach their true potential. Over 500,000 boys and girls have engaged with the programme nationally since its launch in 2006, with some of England's most well-known players counting themselves as former participants. These include Marcus Rashford, Raheem Sterling, Declan Rice and Wilfried Zaha. In Oxfordshire, our team operates Premier League kick sessions in Oxford, Banbury and Witney, and we'll be launching a new programme in Abingdon soon. All abilities and experiences are welcome, and a huge emphasis is placed on making new participants feel welcome and part of each group. While every session concludes with a story to tell, what our female participants from Blackbird Leeds achieved during the Easter break epitomises how we can use football to inspire positive behaviours and experiences which genuinely changes lives. We travelled down the A34 to Portsmouth, where teams representing Crawley, Brighton, Reading, Southampton and Southend joined us in a regional qualifier for the 2024 Premier League Kicks Cup. After winning 5 out of their 6 matches, the girls qualified for the national final, due to be held at St George's Park, the home of All England football squads, later this summer. Not only was this a huge achievement, but the day provided memories which will last a lifetime.
A local family is glad to have a beloved pet tortoise back after the escapee reptile was returned to the wrong person. Kevin, the 18-year-old Horsfield tortoise, has been a treasured pet for the Garrett family since he was 2. Mark Garrett said the cute reptile had been a gift to his eldest son Riley shortly after losing his mother to cancer. The tortoise is believed to escape from home last week and was located nearby. He was then taken to the local vets, who posted a call out for the owner on Facebook. Mr. Garrett believed another person received the tortoise, thinking it was their own animal. After 24 hours at the wrong address, however, Kevin was returned to the Garrett family. There will hopefully be plenty of time to recover, with Kevin's species able to live to 100 years. Mr. Garrett said Kevin lives in an outdoor enclosure in the garden, so he can spend time outside in the warmer weather. The vegetarian critter's favourite foods are dandelion leaves, clover and lettuce. The veterinary group has confirmed the tortoise was returned to an owner, but has not provided further comment.
That was the last news item for this week's Ox Talk. If you have any comments or feedback about Ox Talk, then please ring Margaret on a new number, 07496 062280. And do please leave your name and contact or phone number so that we can return your call. This edition and previous editions of Ox Talk can be found on our website, oxtalk.org.uk, and you can listen there or you can download an edition to listen at your leisure. And it's goodbye from me, and I wish you a peaceful week. Goodbye.
Notice to listeners of OxTalk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to OxTalk using Alexa. To listen to OxTalk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to OxTalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Witney Talking News Latest Edition, Witney Talking News Previous Edition, Witney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
you have problems listening to Ox Talk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Ox Talk and we will try to help.